Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy on KFI is provided by DSL Extreme at dslextreme.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my KFI podcast. This show originally aired on Sunday, January 14th, 2007, on KFI AM 640 in Los Angeles. This is show 318.
Sunday, January 14th.
KFI is the talk station that does live, local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. At 11:05, I'm Ginger Chan, KFI News.
And you're up.
Thank you, Ginger. Good morning, everyone. Time to talk high tech. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. This is the place where we talk about what's happening in the world of technology. Anything to do with computers, the internet, MP3 players, camcorders, cell phones. Boy, I mean, after the Apple iPhone announcement, that's got to be a big topic. Home theater. We talked a lot about televisions yesterday. That was a lot of fun. 1-800-520-1KFI is the phone number. 1-800-520-1534. And I have to tell you, there is, I'm not going to laugh at you or mock at you for a quote dumb question. There aren't any dumb questions. I remember, it was a long time ago, but I remember when I first sat down at a computer, and it's a new world. It's baffling. I'm old enough that I didn't grow up with them. You know, the user groups, computer user groups are aging dramatically because young people don't go to computer user groups any more than you might go to a user group for your microwave oven or your toaster. It's something in their life. They understand it. They get it. They don't need help with it. Or if they do need help, they ask a peer, and there's plenty of them. It's just not something you go to a user group for. It's us old folks who do. And boy, when you go to a user group, you see it's people in their 50s and up. I think of this as a user group of the airwaves. But I also think that there are a few young people, and I know it because we get the calls, who still have questions, who still want to know. Nowadays, it's more like, how do I download music, or what's the best music format, or how do I create my own web page, or, you know, I mean, they're using computers in different ways from us. They're not asking, you know, how do I format that 18-page spreadsheet, but they're absolutely asking questions. And there are no dumb questions. I will not mock you for anything you ask on this show. And if you've listened to the show, I think you know that. 1-800-520-1KFI. And yet, I'm glad to hear the toughest questions, too. I learn from this show at least as much as you do. If a lot more, probably. Because, you know, it happens that I'll frequently, I don't know the answer, but I make a point of finding out. So it's a great opportunity. Now, this is, in other words, this is a safe place for you to find out about technology. Now, I have to say, it's not that way out there in the cold world. There's a discussion going on right now. It started on slashdot.org in the IT department section of slashdot today. And it's a fascinating discussion. There are already well over 600 comments, I think, on this thing. I mean, just a ton of them. The poster poses the question, is a bad attitude damaging the IT profession? IT stands for information technology, and when he's talking about the IT profession, he's really talking about the computer geeks in your office who are there to support you with the technology, there to keep it working, there to keep the servers running, but also to help you if you have a question or you can't print. And think about it. I mean, so many of these guys are nice and sweet and patient. But I think in almost every IT department, there's one guy who just is dismissive. And, you know, you could tell he deep sighs when you ask him, you are so stupid. This is written by an IT professional. He asks, why does IT get a free pass to insult users? It's common. Slamming customers isn't acceptable in any other profession. Doctors don't call their patients meat bags. Well, at least not publicly. I think they probably do privately. I think every profession, they kind of are dismissive privately. But IT professionals think nothing of wearing their scorn on their sleeves. Or at least their chests. Just check out ThinkGeek. ThinkGeek is a website where you can buy t-shirts that say things like, "No, I will not fix your computer." Or, "I see dumb people." There's more at stake, he goes on to say here, than just a few hard feelings. IT may be seriously damaging the credibility of the profession. And he points to an article on a blog called "I'm an Idiot." It's from the It Ought to Be Simple blog, how to work with your company's IT department. It's a great post. I'll put a link in the show notes. Well, I'll put a link to both. I'll start with the Slashdot posting where it began. In fact, let me pass this along to, I think Shuby's back from his debate meet. So I think Shuby will be in the chat room and with the show notes. Let me pass it along to Shuby. And then the article, "I'm an Idiot," is on itoughttobesimple.com. "I'm an idiot," he says. "I'm stupid, clueless, dumb. I'm a complete moron. I'm so inept, in fact, that a new word has been created to capture my incompetence. Loser, spelled L-U-S-E-R, like user. Loser. I feel terrible about it. I really do. It was never my intention to upset my IT department, heck, the whole IT industry, by not being bright enough to use the wonderful tools they gave me, but I just can't seem to get it right." Now, he is a former IT professional, so he's talking tongue-in-cheek, but it's really true that the IT department just has nothing but scorn. Nothing but scorn for the users. I mean, you must have run into that if you've ever worked in an office place. He goes on, "I mean, I know I'm not supposed to click on attachments. Clicking on attachments is bad. My IT department sent me an email explaining this. They were even kind enough to attach a Word document explaining how to set my computer up to prevent the spread of viruses through attachments, well, like Word documents." I have to admit, the little irony had my head scratching for a few minutes. Was this some sort of test for us losers to see if we pay attention? There are a lot of, there's an acronym, which I had never heard before, but there are people in the chat room who are IT professionals. Let's put it that way. Quite a few. And there's an acronym which IT professionals use for these problems, thinking that you losers are too stupid to figure it out. So they'll put this in the, you know, the IT, you know, when you fill out a trouble ticket, they'll put it in the trouble ticket. It's PEBKAC, PEBKAC. And they'll put that in the trouble ticket if you ever see it in a trouble ticket. It stands for "problem exists between keyboard and chair." In other words, it ain't the computer, it's the person using it. Have you, now tell me, have you ever seen that? And if you're an IT professional, have you ever used that? Developer blogs, IT blogs, contain statements like, "Users are stupid, and that needs to be the starting point for software developers." Or in a trade magazine, this is from a trade magazine, "No matter how hard we pray, every network is at one time or another exposed to the ultimate technology risk, users." Well, let me tell you, as a user, I've never been an IT professional. I mean, obviously, this is kind of like what IT professionals do. I answer questions about computers pretty much every day of my life. I'm an honorary IT guy. But maybe IT people ought to start thinking a little bit about cleaning up their acts. Have you ever experienced this kind of dismissive treatment from an IT pro? Let's hear about it. 1-800-520-1KFI. And if you're a recovering IT professional and you'd like to talk about it a little bit, maybe get it off your chest, or maybe would you like to justify it? You know, it's easily justified because, of course, users do dumb things. We all do dumb things. You ever do a dumb thing? IT professionals, you ever type rm-rf*? Come on, I know you have. You can admit it. We've all done dumb things. How many times have you slapped your head saying, "I can't believe I just did that"? So let's cut a little slack for the poor users. They're people, too. They make mistakes just like you and me. No more pebcacks. Here's another one. Picnic. Dan, who is a... I'm going to out you, Dan. He's our chat room mod and does tech support. And he has another one called Picnic. I like this acronym. P-I-C-N-I-C. Wait, let me see. When I see if I can remember, see what it says. Picnic stands for... He says it just to their face. Problem isn't computer. Well, I'll have to find that. Define picnic again for me, Dan. And another guy in the chat room says, I've been in 25 years in IT. Actually, it's a woman, Sarah Jane. I've been 25 years in IT. I've never heard pebcac. Well, maybe they don't use that in Britain. She's British. I'm sure they have their own acronyms. Come on, confess, IT pros. And maybe turn over a new leaf. And there are plenty of IT pros who are very, very good. I've worked with many of them, the majority of them, I'm sure, who would never dream of doing that. But you know, when you call that guy in India and you talk to him, you kind of get the feeling that as soon as you get off the line, he's going to be laughing. In fact, he may even be. Don't you get the feeling when you talk to tech support sometimes, not only are they laughing at you, but they're calling over the other guys. And pointing at the screen saying, you know, they put you on mute saying, you won't believe this. There's a comic who does a wonderful routine. He does it mostly for computer trade shows because the tech industry gets it, where he plays a phone support guy and he keeps putting the user on hold and swearing at him and so forth. Sarah Jane points out that there is that same attitude in other industries like retail. Of course, it's true. I guess if you deal with the public in general, it's hard to keep a good attitude. Maybe we should be more sympathetic to the IT pro. What do you think? 1-800-520-1KFI. Let's talk about that today. I think in some ways there's this kind of almost a priesthood of people who understand technology, and there's a huge investment. It makes them look smart. Makes, I should say, us look smart. Like we know what's going on, and we have a huge investment in keeping you, the rest of you, ignorant. So you need us. So we look smart. I'll confess, I've spent my entire career fighting that. Maybe it's time to acknowledge it and move on. 1-800-520-1KFI. Anything you want to talk about, it has to do with tech. Computers, the internet, cell phones. We can talk about the iPhone. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. It's 1:17.
It's for your own good, Dr. Laura. Tomorrow, noon to 3.
KFI AM 640.
11:23. KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And we are talking tech till 2 this afternoon. It's kind of neat. The show, of course, streams over the internet. And we have a vast audience thanks to that. Thanks to KFI for doing that. I really think that's fantastic. Because I stream the whole channel, of course. It's not just for me. And then they make a podcast out of the show at KFIAM640.com. Use the keyword podcast. I also do the same on my podcast site, twit.tv. That was actually my original podcast. And I started doing that back in September, October of 2004, when podcasting was just getting its sea legs. It just basically started. I was we've been offering the show as a download since I started doing it in January of 2004, but started offering it as a podcast in October, thanks to a kid named Matthew who called me. It was really great and said, hey, you ever hear podcasting? I said, no. He said, well, you should do it. And I said, okay. And we started podcasting. So this show is one of the original, probably one of the 10 first podcasts in the world. And I just got a note from a fella in Singapore. I posted yesterday's show already. He said, thank you for posting. And I live in Singapore and I was planning to listen live at 3 a.m., but I overslept. I'm not surprised. So thanks for listening in Singapore or wherever you listen. All over the world. It's remarkable. Rob, Pasadena, Maryland. Welcome to KFI.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, Rob.
Hey, thanks for all you're doing.
Oh, my pleasure. I Hey, I do make a living doing it. So.
Well, it's great, and I just recently took over an IT shop where I work. And,
So are you a good IT guy or a bad IT guy?
I think I'm a good IT guy because I don't come from that background.
Yeah, that probably makes a difference. If you remember being a user, it's probably helpful.
Is that
an unfair criticism of IT?
I find that it's about 50-50. The guy that runs our network who just started working for me is a wonderful individual, but he's got guys working for him that, you know, some of them like the users and others fall into that category of, you know, not thinking terribly highly of the guys who have to sit behind the keyboard every day.
It's hard. Look, at being a customer service guy of any stripe is hard, whether it's retail or IT, and maybe not everybody's cut out for it.
I think you're right.
Some people like helping other people. Maybe those are the people who should focus on IT. And if you're,
I think so.
The problem is computer geeks are usually antisocial, right? So there's a tendency to not like people if you're into computers. That might be why you got into it in the first place.
Yeah, there's some of that. And I think that sometimes it's guys that and ladies who would rather sit behind their keyboards and not have social interaction.
Yes.
That sometimes are, you know, really the best to have when you're doing, you know, the day-to-day programming and sysadmin kind of things, though.
Well, they're the smartest geeks.
Yeah.
Put them behind the screen and don't let them talk to users.
Amen.
That's my suggestion. What can I do for you today?
Well, I've been listening to podcasts for a long time, but I'm finally trying to get my church up.
Great.
On iTunes. What I'm looking for is something that will help easily generate the RSS feeds.
Oh, you sure need that. That's what makes a podcast a podcast. As I was saying, I had a radio show that you could download for a long time. And when Matthew called me and said, well, you should make a podcast. Really, that's all it was creating this specialized XML text file. That's the format is XML. That's called an RSS feed. And people can subscribe to it, whether it's on iTunes or Juice or many, you know, there are a lot of different ways to subscribe to these feeds and automatically get the show. That's what makes it a podcast as opposed to just putting a sermon online. So, but making the feed could be tricky. There's ways to do it manually and there's ways to do it automatically. The manual way, are you Windows or Mac?
Windows primarily.
Okay. On Windows, the manual way that I recommend is a program called Feed for All at feedforall.com.
Okay.
And it's like a WordPress, you know, it's a forms-based editor that you'll fill out the form and then it generates the XML.
All right.
And then you can put that somewhere. There's an even easier way to do it if you already have an RSS, a text RSS feed. For instance, many people use WordPress or other blogs to create their website and then they just will put a link to an audio file in that blog. Are you doing something like that already?
Not yet. We'll get to that point in a few weeks.
Yeah, if you set up a WordPress blog and then you put a link to an audio file in it, then the easiest way is you've already got a RSS feed. It's just not exactly a podcast feed, but if you go through feedburner.com, and it's a free service, although if you pay a little more, they have Feedburner Pro that will give you stats and so forth. That will take your blog and turn it into an appropriate podcast feed. So a combination of things like TypePad or WordPress and FeedBurner will do it for you automatically. And it does all the iTunes stuff and everything. In fact, I was really, I don't use FeedBurner, but when iTunes first came online, a lot of people who were using FeedBurner were immediately iTunes compatible. And it took me a while to figure it out. So Feed for All, if you're just doing it from scratch, and if you've got a blog or an existing RSS feed that's not yet a podcast feed, you know, that could be Blogger, TypePad, WordPress, feedburner.com will turn it into an RSS feed. 1129, Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Ginger Chan is in the KFI News Center.
Blunt, but with a point. Dr. Laura, tomorrow, noon to 3.
KFI AM 640.
KFI KFI AM 640, Mars Stimulating Talk Radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let me give you my phone number, 1-800-520-1KFI. I'll be here till 2 taking calls. You can also find the show notes online at KFIAM640.com. I hope you could find the show notes. Uh-oh. Is Shuby there? He may not be. Yes, he is. Good. You can find the show notes online at KFIAM640.com. You click my name under shows or click my picture if you're listening live. And then on my page on the KFI site, you'll see a link to the official website. That'll take you to leo.am. This is Sunday's show, 318. Past shows are there. There's an audio archives. There's also a link to our chat at irc.dslextreme.com, and that's a great way to participate in the show. Really fun there. Dan and Dustin. What, is Dan all alone? Isn't Red Sox Dan helping you out? Oh, yeah. Mike B., Illuminati. Shuby's in there. And we've got a bot keeping an eye on things. I don't know how useful the bot is. Bots aren't usually too bright, but at least the bot won't call you names. Won't say picnic or pebcack, do you? We're talking about IT departments and how sometimes they can be a little mean. Antonio, Lexington Park, Maryland. Welcome. KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Antonio.
Hello, Leo. How are you, sir?
I'm great. How are you to do today?
I'm pebcack is probably the funniest thing I've heard all day.
Have you ever been called a pebcack?
I actually used to work in IT, but I have since left for a less stressful job.
It must be, like, you know, to defend IT people, of course it's stressful. And I'm not, yeah. I mean, when my mom calls me and asks for tech support, you could see the steam come out of my ears. I don't know why, but for some reason, I could do it on the phone, on the radio, but when I have a hard time with family members, so.
I'm still forced to do the family package, though.
That's hard.
Yeah.
Really hard.
It's a living.
It's a living, kind of. Yeah, and they say, and you click the start menu, okay. Under accessories, okay. Click system. You just, after a while, you just that wears. So I understand, pebcack.
Well, then, Leo, to ease my IT support questions, I am actually going to go buy a Mac today.
Ah. That's Mac. By the way, what I tell my family members. I say, look, I'll support you, but you have to buy a Mac. I don't want to be doing any spyware removal or antivirus removal. You know, if you buy a Mac, I'll be glad to support you. If you buy Windows, you're on your own.
Right, right. Well, since I've been a Windows user for so long, I'm not really sure I'm about ready to cut the umbilical completely.
Well,
yet.
I don't blame you. You don't have to nowadays. That's kind of nice.
Well, that's kind of where my question comes from. You know, between boot camp and Parallels, I'm thinking when I buy the Mac to upgrade to the 2 gigabytes of RAM in case I want to run Parallels.
That's right.
Windows fine.
You've been listening.
Yeah, of course. Oh, it's all my life, sir. And my question is, I'm planning on buying a MacBook, just so the entry-level type, the 2 gigahertz, 8 gigabyte hard drive. Is it enough? I know the video card is not as good as the one, the MacBook Pro. Is it enough to run Vista, though?
Absolutely. So, in fact, you'll see a lot of PC notebooks using the Intel GMA950, which is the graphics chipset in the MacBook. Intel designed it. It's motherboard graphics. It's kind of low end graphics. They designed it though. With kind of the minimum specs that you could still run Aero, the slick user interface for Vista.
Okay, I know Vista is very hard on the system.
It is,
especially all the bells and whistles.
And the 950 was specifically designed for Vista. It's kind of the cheapest graphics card that will still run Vista's Aero.
But will it run the Vista with all the little beautiful?
Yes, Aero. It's called the Aero interface, and it will run Aero. Now, it will only run Aero in boot camp. As you said, there are two ways to run Vista or Windows of any kind on a Mac. One is Apple's boot camp, which really just partitions the drive, takes the single hard drive, divides it into two parts, and installs Windows on it. And then when you turn on the computer, you say, I'll run Mac or I'll run Windows today. What do you want to do today? And when you're running Windows in a setup like that, it's really identical to running Windows on a PC. I mean, the Mac hardware is a PC hardware. So it's not much different than if you had a Dell with those. In fact, it's exactly the same if you had a Dell with those same specs.
Right.
So in that case, Aero does run. Now, here's the drawback. When you're running it in emulation, that's the second way to do it, using a program like Parallels or VMware, then you're running the Mac operating system and then kind of inside a little pouch inside the Mac operating system, you're also running Windows. That's why you need all that RAM, because Mac has to have, you know, OS X has to have its gigabyte and Vista has to have its gigabyte. When you run it that way, nobody yet has figured out a way to make Aero, that slick interface, work. I mean, Vista works fine. It runs fine. In fact, it runs nearly as fast as it does under boot camp. But you, and frankly, not having Aero is not the end of the world on Vista. It just means you don't get, it's eye candy. It's not anything particularly useful. So, no, you don't get Aero when you run under Parallels, but you do get it when you run under boot camp.
And one last thing here. You've mentioned before a book, I think it's called The Missing Manual or something like that.
Yep. Highly recommend it.
Can I get that name and author again?
Yep. It's a guy named David Pogue, good friend of mine, P-O-G-U-E. He's an author for the New York Times. He's their tech columnist. Really fun, great guy. And The Missing Manual, OS X, The Missing Manual. And he's actually doing a Vista book, as we just finished his Vista book, too. So this guy is a double threat. We'll have to get him on the show. He's wonderful. But yeah, The Missing Manual, OS X. I think that's probably the best if you're looking for kind of a thick reference manual. There are simpler books that just kind of give you an overview. But if you're not a former IT guy, you're going to want The Missing Manual one.
Thanks a lot, Leo.
You're welcome,
you've been
Antonio.
A great help. I've been watching this tech TV. I grew up on you, and I'm a better geek because of you and your friends.
Thanks
a lot, man.
Hey, I appreciate it. I hope he's 16. I'm praying he's 16. It's kind of, you know you've been in the business a while when you start getting that. I grew up with you. That's kind of neat. I find that a real honor. And I've said that to people. I work with Dick DiBartolo, who's been the Mad's maddest writer for Mad Magazine for, a long time. He's not much older than me. He literally started as a young teenager. And I grew up to him reading Mad Magazine. So that's kind of a nice thing. Diane in L.A., welcome. KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Diane. Are you there?
I'm here.
Welcome to the radio show.
I have to tell you about a HP support disaster.
Oh, I'm sorry. What happened?
I have to tell you, I am not near as smart as your last caller.
Okay.
Not even close.
Well, I won't make fun of you.
Please don't.
Okay,
but
I promise.
Can, because I deserve it. I'm very challenged.
You know what my motto is, and I really emphasize this, it's not your fault. If you can't figure, you're an intelligent human being, you're walking around, you can make dinner, you should be able to figure that out. If you can't, it's not your fault, it's the computer, the computer's fault, the industry's fault for making this stuff so complicated unnecessarily. So don't beat yourself up.
Well, I did, and I was stupid. So the stupidest thing I did was call HP support.
Well, that shouldn't be a dumb thing, should it?
I didn't think so.
What did they do to you?
I have a sign to my desk now, don't call HP support again.
Oh, no.
I bought a new HP printer to replace an old one.
Okay.
And it basically wasn't accepting it.
Yeah.
And it was late at night. I couldn't get my son, so I thought, okay, call HP support.
Ah, yeah, that's when you're weakest, late at night.
You got it.
Yes.
I got through to India.
Oh, dear.
And they had me, I was going through doing things I didn't understand, reading numbers, they didn't understand my numbers, they had me reinstall, uninstall, and basically whatever they had me do didn't work, and they said, okay, you need to recover from this.
Oh, no, 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 no.
Yes.
Red light.
But I was dumb. I said, oh, yeah,
Well, they should say right up front, please back up your data before you run this. It will erase the contents of your hard drive. Did they not say that to you?
Leo, they didn't.
They're jerks. That makes me so mad. It feels like you should be able to sue them for that.
But you know what? And then it was even after I got through it, basically that night, and it was over New Year's, I was on the phone with them. I'm not kidding, because I'm so darn stubborn, 5.5 hours. And basically when they got me back, I got my printer working, but I lost obviously everything.
Yeah. So, see, this is SOP almost always with tech support. And here's why they do this. You know, with your computer came, now this is funny because you're not getting support on the computer, you're getting support for the printer. But anyway, with your computer came these system recovery disks. And these system recovery disks are designed to do one thing and one thing only. Get your computer back to the way it was the day you got it. Guess what it didn't have the day you got it? All that stuff you worked so hard on over the last whatever year, the applications you installed, all your data, none of that was there. Why do they make you do that? Because they don't know how the computer's been changed since it came from the factory.
But, Leo, it even gets worse than that, because it's like things that you buy. When they give you a computer, it's all these things they want you to buy.
Oh, yeah. So all of that stuff's
back. All of a sudden,
back.
I have this new screen selling me AOL.
Yeah.
Norton, and I already own it. I own all
the
discs.
That's because it brought you back to the day it came from the factory, right? And so that was the way it was when you got it. The advantage to them from the point of view of tech support is now it's a known quantity. They know exactly what's on your computer. And guess what? It worked. They were able to get the printer working. So, so they kind of, what they did is they took the shortcut. There probably was some other program running, probably a security program that was causing a conflict. And so they took the shortcut. They blasted your hard drive. Now, it's unconscionable that they did that without warning you that that was going to erase everything.
I know.
I think that's appalling.
I got it back, but basically it was the next day getting somebody again who wouldn't speak English, but was good enough to get me to uninstall a Norton, get my the one I owned back on.
Yeah.
And then I own Microsoft Outlook that is a multi-use for my work, for my business.
So you had to reinstall that, yep.
Well, no, you know what they did?
What?
They sent me to Microsoft to talk to them to get it reinstalled, and they wanted to charge me.
Of course they did. Yeah, I mean, this is why I do this show. This is why I do the TV shows, because users, frankly, are treated like this, and it's appalling. Now, we created this in a way because we demanded cheaper and cheaper and cheaper products. Now, when you get a computer that cheap, or you get a printer that cheap, or software that cheaply, what do they cut out? They cut out support.
Or and they, somebody who speaks English.
Yeah, because they can't afford, you know, if you buy a computer and their margin is $100 on that computer, it's about, I mean, the tech support cost to them is at least $50 an hour.
Yeah.
So you said, how long did you spend online with them?
I'm not kidding you, 5.5 hours, because I decided I was going to relax and watch TV and put it on speakerphone.
So that call cost them undoubtedly every bit of profit they made off you from the computer.
Well, then it went hours after that, the next day and the next day.
So in a way, it's good of them to do that. I mean, one of the reasons they go to India is because they don't have to pay those guys very much. It's much cheaper. It's 1/10 the cost in India. Nevertheless, you know, it used to be that you would call and you would get, Dell, for instance, is very famous for this. It's a wonderful tech support in the Austin call center.
Is it?
Well, not anymore. They've outsourced to India, too. You get this. You probably get the same guy. Because these guys do it for four different companies. I mean, it's a big outsourcing tech support.
Where can you go that you have a tech support that speaks to the user like me, who isn't very good?
Well, you can get good tech support, but it won't be free. You'll be paying for it. We have one sponsor that I highly recommend, Make It Work. And they would have solved the problem without erasing your data. But it's not free. That's the problem. We want cheap computers and we want good tech support. You can't have both. So if you want good tech support, frankly, I think somebody like Make It Work, makeitwork.com, is a better choice. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's a sad story. I'm so sorry that happened to you. Let it be a lesson to us all. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. It's 11:52.
Who needs coffee? Bill Handel, tomorrow morning, 5 to 9.
KFI AM 640.
11:59 on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. We're going to talk more about IT departments and how you could tell us your IT nightmare stories. Or if you're in IT, you could defend yourself. 1-800-520-1KFI. Or we'll talk about anything having to do with tech. Another 2 hours to come. But right now at 11:59, time to head to the KFI News Center, where Courtney Kramer has the latest.
Sunday, January 14th.
Right now it's 52 in Fullerton, 48 in Brea, 52 in Santa Monica, and 50 in Manhattan Beach. KFI is a talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. At 12:06, I'm Courtney Kramer, KFI News.
Thank you, Courtney. Good morning. Good afternoon. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. We talk high tech every Saturday and Sunday, 11 to 2, and I love doing it with you. Tech support with a difference. Friendly smiles. No question too dumb. I will never say PEBCAC or picnic. Those we're learning are the acronyms that the IT department sometimes uses to describe us. PEBCAC stands for problem. What is it? Problem exists between keyboard and computer. Let me just think. What's between the keyboard and the, oh, me. And then picnic, I'm not sure, but its problem isn't computer, it's user, basically. Maybe you want to defend yourself. You're in IT. It is a tough job. Maybe you want to tell an IT horror tale. 1-800-520-1KFI. We're learning more about the Apple iPhone, and frankly, the more I learn, the more disappointed I am. Steve Jobs is really, he's an excellent salesman. They call it the reality distortion field. He believes so strongly in what he's selling. It's hard not to buy into it. And man, a tour de force performance at Macworld Expo with his two-hour keynote, his demonstration. He took almost an hour and a half to demonstrate the iPhone, and it looked slick. But he left some questions. He said it's running OS 10. He said, really, this isn't just a phone. This is a portable computer. It combines an internet communication device with a phone, with an iPod. But really, what he was trying to say is this is not your father's or cell phone. This is a new category. It's running OS 10, he said. But now we're finding out, according to the New York Times, that you won't be able to put your own applications on there. Now, that's very disappointing. I mean, even, you know, the dumbest smartphone allows you to install your own apps, whether it's a Trio or my T-Mobile Dash. I can install my own applications on there. And that not being able to, I think, is significant. He says, oh, well, we don't want to bring down the Singular network because some guy's got some application on there. That was the same justification the phone company used for years for not letting you buy your own phone. Oh, my goodness. If we let other people put other equipment on our pristine telephone network, we couldn't be held responsible for what would happen. So you have to rent your phone from Western Electric. Remember that? You younger people don't. You couldn't buy telephones in the store. You had to rent them from the phone company for a couple of bucks a month. Well, there's a profit center. Same logic. Steve Jobs saying, well, we can't let you install applications. It could affect the reliability of the Singular network. What? Huh? Not that it's such a reliable network to begin with. And you can't on your Trio. You can't on a lot of these smartphones. So, huh? It's got Wi-Fi on it, but you have to use their particular applications. You can't, for instance, put Skype on it. Well, I'd love that. I'm sure Singular would hate it because then I might use the Wi-Fi connection and Skype to make free phone calls when I'm within a Wi-Fi area instead of using their expensive cell network. So some disappointments, I'm sorry to say. We'll see. Again, it's not going to be out till June. I talked to David Pogue again. We were talking about him last hour. He's one of the few journalists who actually got to play with the iPhone for about half an hour. And he said, you know, it's not that easy to type on. Yeah, that's what I was afraid of. Steve made it look pretty easy. Mm-mm. So Apple's stock went up, what, almost 8% after that speech? And the other companies, like BlackBerry's stock, went down by about the same amount. That may be premature. Let's wait till we see this thing in action before we go crazy. I admit, there's some great stuff. The touch user interface is fantastic. I want that on an iPod. Yeah, it's an iPod, but are you going to be running down your battery, watching movies and listening to music? Or it's your phone too, right? It only has 5 hours of battery life if you're watching movies. You're going to sit in a plane, watch movies the whole way, and then not have a phone when you get off? No. Let's have an iPod for that. I'd like that screen. I'd like that interface on something besides my phone. 1-800-520-1KFI. We talk about that too. Let's get back to the phones. And Kurt in La Habra. Kurt, welcome. KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yeah, by the way, the touch things interface is great unless you're blind.
Yeah, no kidding. It's completely inaccessible.
As I am. Okay. I may have done something dumb.
Uh-oh.
Speaking of, yes. I got it. Tried to run Defrag last night, and I got a note saying MMC cannot open the file because it may not exist or it may be created by a later copy of MMC.
Hmm.
Now, the only thing I've done lately is I did run spyware search and destroy.
Okay.
And I'm wondering if maybe I did something,
no.
And I'm wondering what I do about it.
No, I don't think so. Although, SpyBot, has a feature to auto-immunize. Did you turn on that auto-immunization?
Because I very well could have, and I...
That's a good feature, actually.
But I'm not sure. What can I do? Because, see, I do a lot of work with you know, big audio files and stuff like that, so I need to know, because I spent a couple hours removing stuff from my drive, but now I don't know how much room I have because I can't run defrag.
Right.
And I'm wondering what I can do about this.
Well, MMC cannot open the file is kind of a generic, unfortunately,
right.
Error message. So it doesn't tell us much about exactly what's going on.
Right.
Now, the SpyBot Immunize, which you can turn off, and you might try that, does lock down a few key system files that are commonly modified by spyware or adware. And so in doing so, might in fact prevent, might keep MMC from being able to open a file that it wants to. So I would try turning off the immunization feature. You can do that in SpyBot. Do you have any other security software running on there?
I have the Adaware, which I only run, you know.
You just use it as a scanner. You don't.
Right. Right.
All right. Well, there, you know, I hate to give you a recipe to fix this MMC problem because it could be, what file does it say it can't open?
Oh, it's a defrag. Let's see.
What I would suggest doing, and this is actually usually the case with defrag, try it in safe mode.
Oh, yeah, but then it doesn't talk. Then I can't use my synthesizer.
You're right. Now, one of the reasons you do run it in safe mode is because it doesn't open a bunch of excess baggage.
Right.
And it does a better job of defragging anyway. In fact, frequently, a very common question is, I can't defrag because something's using, you know, defrag has to restart every five seconds.
Right.
And the solution to that is to do it in safe mode. Well, if you can ask somebody to do it for you, that would be one thing. I have to say, I don't find defrag particularly necessary anyway.
Well, the thing is, I need to know mostly how much room I have on my disk.
Ah.
So
you use the analysis feature to tell you what's there.
Right, and then I will defrag, because I actually have had some cases where the system started to run really slow and it didn't work right, and I ran defrag, and then it was okay. Right.
There are some people who do things that particularly fragment the drive. Fragmenting just means it's kind of unoptimal, that the files are spread out all over the drive instead of all in one piece. Defragging reorganizes them and can make the drive more efficient. It's often used as a voodoo. There's a number of voodoo recommendations for fixing your computer that don't really do anything but make people feel better. And defrag is absolutely one of them.
Right. Well, if anybody has any ideas, I mean, you know, because like I said, I mean, mostly I really need to know, okay, well, you know, this is how big the drive is and this is how much you got left. But
I mean, if it cannot open the defrag files, it's possible that they're damaged. One thing you can do, and again, you're adding a little twist because you can't see it.
Right.
So, but one thing you can do is you can uninstall and reinstall Windows components, and that might be one way to repair that defragmentation feature.
Okay.
You do that in the Add Remove Control Panel.
Okay.
There's a Windows component button that's just below the Add Remove Programs button. It'll tell you which Windows components are installed and which aren't. I don't know how well your screen reader will handle it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, if anybody, I'm going to kind of try to go up to your and look and see either in your chat room. But if you come up with something good,
I'll let you know.
Talk about it on the radio.
I will. And the chat room is very helpful for stuff like that. It's just such a generic error, it's hard to tell exactly what's wrong. Now, one of our chatters, TLTBG, says under services, the DCOM service, SpyBot sometimes turns off the DCOM service, and that needs to be turned back on. It is possible that it is a SpyBot protection item. So I think that might be something to do, is to, first of all, turn off SpyBot's auto-immunization features, and then make sure that DCOM service is turned on. So you do that by right-clicking on My Computer, selecting Manage, and then clicking the services tab in the system console and look for the DCOM service. Make sure that's turned on. Maybe that'll help. That's one suggestion from the chat room. SpyBot Search and Destroy is an excellent anti-spyware program, but I don't think it causes these kinds of problems. I haven't ever heard of anybody saying, I can't defrag now that I'm using SpyBot. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 1217.
KFI News, powered by the worldwide resources of Fox News. KFI, AM 640.
1224 on KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy, talking high tech till 2 o'clock this afternoon. You want more tech all week long? My podcasts, all sorts of subjects, everything from Mac to Windows to Linux to Vista, security, tech news. It's all online at twit.tv. We do about, 15 hours a week of, maybe 20 hours a week of programming. Ton of stuff. Georgie's on the line from Thousand Oaks. Hello, Georgie. Welcome to KFI. Thanks for being so patient.
Uncle Leo.
Uncle Leo. Yeah, that's me.
Listen, I can't believe it. Earlier, you had a caller and she complained about her tech support with HP.
Right.
I had the same thing last night.
No.
Well, almost as bad. My control panel disappeared.
Okay.
And I thought, well, okay, let me call their tech support and see what they say. That's the first thing you want to do. Just do a system recover.
Yeah. Well, that's the easiest way to get your control panel back. Did they warn you that by doing
no,
so?
No. I said, won't that, won't I lose all my files? Oh yeah.
I can't believe
okay.
They don't warn you about that.
I know. That's why I was shocked.
Good on you that you were smart enough to know that, but that's not going to be very common. I mean, most people are just going to do what they say.
Exactly.
Wow. That's appalling.
It is. It's insane.
So let's say it so everybody listening knows that those system recovery disks, the reason tech support wants you to use them is because it'll put the computer back to the way it was when you got it. By the way, that means it will erase everything you've done since the day you got it, including all your data, all your pictures, all the applications you've installed. That's what they want to do because then they eliminate all these unknown variables. I mean, it's easy for them, but it's terrible for you.
Well, you said we don't have system recovery disks anymore. They don't give them to you when you buy a new computer.
You have to make them or run it off of the hard drive. But it is there. It's in a hidden. It's a hidden partition on the hard drive. Some systems will give it. Some even with HP, it depends what you buy. In some cases, they will give it to you. In some cases, not. They don't like to. Not because it's so expensive. Really, I think it's Microsoft discouraging it because they don't want to give you a Windows install disk, right? Because you could steal Windows. You're a pirate. Don't you know you're a pirate?
Yeah.
The whole industry, everything, computer industry, record industry, movie industry, all these companies are really starting to come from the point of view that we are stealing from them. And that's
right.
A terrible thing for customer service. But that's another question entirely. Don't get me started on that one. So what did you do?
Well, okay, while I'm on hold with you, then I went back and talked to tech support online. I tried a different venue.
Yeah.
And they gave me some program that would restore it. But the program is not one of theirs. It's not an HP program. So it's really strange. It says, just be aware that this is not one of our programs when you use it. So I did, and it came back, but I'm curious. I just...
Which program? What was the name of the program? Just out of curiosity.
Let me see if I could find it.
That's
right
part of
here.
The problem with tech support is that you hit different quality people. Some people are really sharp and really know their stuff, and some people aren't. And the training is not necessarily very good. So you just have to be lucky. It sounds like you got lucky the second time.
Well, I shouldn't maybe call it a program. It's an icon, and it's called Registration Entries Registry Editor.
RegEdit, yeah.
It's a small 326-byte program.
Oh, okay. That is, what it is it's registry commands. You could save those out in a text file. And where did you download it from? Do you remember?
They gave...
They just sent it to you. Okay.
Yeah.
So what had happened is, just as a postmortem, is something had modified your registry to delete or change those icons in your control panel. This is an easy thing to do. And they just gave you a registry patch that basically restored those registry entries the way it was. It isn't exactly a program, you're right. And it can be dangerous if you get it from somebody nefarious. But it's actually a very simple. If you look in there, there's a key. I suspect there's a key called "Don't Load," and it just deletes that key. It says "Don't load the control panel." By deleting it, suddenly it comes back. So that's probably what happened. I mean, it isn't a program. It's actually a great. You got a good guy. It's a great little tech support trick. You can create these little files that modify the registry by remote control and fix the problem. And obviously, it worked. Got to run. News is next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. See, there is some good tech support out there, but you just have to find it. Courtney Kramer is in the KFI News Center.
Dr. Dean Adel, this afternoon at 2.
KFI AM 640.
1237 KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI, 1-800-520-1KFI is the number. Sherry is so very patient from Pittsburgh, PA. Hey, Sherry, how are you today?
Hi, Lee. I'm doing fine. Thank you. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for calling.
I am an IT pro for my family, I guess.
Yes.
That's how you'd put it.
Well, you know, that's one thing. I mean, there's professionals who may, you know, are doing it in business, but then many of us, especially people who listen to the show, are doing it for their family all the time anyway. Are you patient with your family?
As patient as one can be. Started out with a TRS-80, moved on to the Commodore computer. Then I was part of the Genie service. Do you remember
that? Yeah, I remember
that?
Genie. I had a Genie account. You bet. Yeah. I love Genie.
I worked for them, and then I wrote for Commodore Magazine for a while.
Oh, Sherry, you're a geek from way back.
Yes, I am a total geek. I love my computers.
Are you in the chat room with us right now?
No, I was on there a while ago, not today.
Okay, yeah, because they seem to know you in the chat room.
Oh,
they're
okay.
They're saying hi to you.
Tell everybody I said hi. I'll come back.
Okay.
But anyway, my question for today is, I have passed on my old computers to family members who have since moved away, and I have a slew of the 5 1/4-inch floppy disks, and I'd love to be able to convert those or put the data that's on them onto a CD, but of course, I don't have a disk drive now.
Yeah, yeah.
And I made sure that I grabbed a USB 3.5-inch disk drive, but they don't make the 5 1/4 that I know of.
These are 5 1/4-inch disks. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, those big ones.
You know, who knows if they're even any good anymore? I mean, those things are at least 20 years old now.
I'm giving away my age.
And the backing starts to fail and they start to shred. I mean, and what is on there that you want?
Graphics.
Ah, interesting. Well, there are companies that do that. I mean, there are people who have not gotten rid of their 5 1/4-inch disks. And these are people who actually make a living doing this kind of conversion. So you can, of course, you know, pay somebody to do this. I'm not sure you'd want to, but you certainly can. There are a lot of companies that do this. You've looked for a 5 1/4-inch disk, a drive, and they don't.
Yeah, I was hoping to find an external one similar to what they do for 3.5. And I don't understand why they make the 3.5 external drive.
Well, because they're more recent. Do you have a computer that has a parallel port on it anymore?
Yes.
Ah. All right. So now the trick is going to be to find a 5 1/4-inch drive. Doesn't need any special interface. It just needs a 5 1/4-inch drive. And I'm going to put a link in the show notes to an article on how to make a cable that will connect that 5 1/4-inch bare drive to your parallel port.
Great.
Because you sound like the type of person that could probably do this.
Oh, yeah. You would not believe the things I've done.
Yeah. But, I have a feeling you would even enjoy this challenge.
that's why I like listening to you, Leo. You feed that hunger all the time for more geek items, or whatever you want to call it.
This is very geeky. I'm going to oldcomputers.net and looking at these 5 1/4 inch drives, or discs, I should say. Did you ever have an 8-inch disc?
No.
I did. I went to a radio station, and this is in 84. This wasn't even that long ago, 1984, that had an old PDP, and they were still using it. It was running off 8-inch floppies. I mean, that's where the name floppy came from. When they're that big, they really are floppy. And I got rid of that by breaking it. That was how I solved that. Oh, it stopped working. I can't understand. We'll have to buy a PC. It was a little bit crazy.
Can I ask you one more question, Leo?
Sure, Sherry.
Will you ever be coming back, your show, ever come back to the United States?
Yeah, I'm very hopeful. Here's what's going on with my TV show. You know, Sherry obviously watched Tech TV, which I was on from 98 through 2004. It was a great channel just devoted to this stuff. It really was for the geeks. But the problem is, it's not a huge audience. Let's be honest. And they couldn't make money. It cost them hundreds of millions of dollars to do the channel. It was owned by Paul Allen, the Microsoft billionaire, fourth richest guy in the world. Maybe he's the third this year. I can't. He's in there. He's in the top five. Let's put it that way. But he still didn't want to lose $100 million a year on it. So he sold it and they gutted it and it's gone. It was a teardown. However, we all went on to do our own thing. That's why I have a podcast network. That's why I do this radio show. It was right at the end of that network that I started working at KFI. And ironically, the channel that was rebroadcasting the stuff that we did in the States in Canada called me and said, well, how'd you like to come to Toronto and start doing the show? So for the last couple of years, almost three now, I have been doing Call for Help, which is one of the shows I did for Tech TV in Canada. But you can't see it in the U.S. You could see it in Canada and Australia. That's why you may notice we get callers from Canada and Australia fairly frequently. That's why. So here's the deal. We've tried to get it back on in the United States, tried and tried and tried, and there just hasn't been that much interest, frankly. So we're revamping the show. We're renaming it. I think part of the reason is because Call for Help was canceled in the U.S. at one time. A lot of networks are not going to take a canceled show. And so we're renaming it to The Lab with Leo Laporte. That's going to be the new name. And here's the secret sauce. First of all, we're going to start shooting it in Vancouver, which to American networks, believe it or not, is more like the U.S. than Toronto is. Toronto's very Canadian, but so many movies and TV shows are shot in Vancouver now. That it's almost like a U.S. city. So we're shooting it in Vancouver, hoping that'll make it more palatable, and we're shooting it in high def. And it's going to look more like the Screensavers, the other show I used to do. It's going to be more of a kind of all-in-one geek fest. So I'm very hopeful. I think once we start shooting it in high def, there will be, somebody. There's many high def networks that are desperate for high def content. And even though it's not Bikini Babes, the fact that it's in high def, I'm hoping we'll make the difference. So we're crossing our fingers, Sherry. We shall see. Mike in Glendale, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Mike.
Hi, Leo. I have one of the venerable Hewlett-Packard 5550 printers.
Ah,
love the heck out of it.
Ah,
and
boy, this is old hardware week, I'll tell you.
Well, I guess it is,
yeah.
And that's what's biting me. I have a small network at home, and I have three computers that work with this.
Right.
And what's happened is I use one of those Hewlett-Packard Jet Directs to get from the network to the Centronics port on the printer.
Okay.
Well, now that the printer has conked out, I have a problem. I can't get it's really hard to find inkjet printers now with the Centronics port.
Nobody puts a parallel port on their printers anymore because USB has completely supplanted it.
That's correct. So when I go out to look for printers, I can either spend like $170 and get a fairly plain printer that has an Ethernet port, or I guess I could try one of the new whiz-bang USB printers that has
let me give you a couple of alternatives. You can buy a $12 USB to parallel port cable.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I thought I'd have to get a print server.
Well, the way this will work is it'll allow you to print from the computer to this parallel port printer, but it won't be shared. No longer you'll be using the Jet Direct. It'll just be on one, and then you'll have to use printer sharing on that computer.
No, I really need the network.
Yeah. What I would suggest is you buy you spend a little bit more and get a network printer, a printer that has an Ethernet port. In other words, no more JetDirect. The printer is on the network, doesn't need any individual computer to use it, and it's a network printer, and it's a much better way to go. And by the way, unlike parallel ports, I don't think Ethernet jacks are going to be replaced anytime soon.
I would agree with that. For the amount of money I'm going to spend on the printer, I can get a whole lot more printer if I do get one with a USB port. What about a USB, one of those little $50, $75 USB print servers that goes between the network and the USB port?
Sure. It's doing the same thing. It's what you're doing is you're adding on to that printer that feature, right? So you're taking you're taking a USB printer and you're adding on. It's like adding JetDirect. You're adding on a little box that hangs off the side that turns it into an Ethernet printer. That's all.
Would that be bidirectional so I can see the ink content on the computer?
Yep. In general, that's why I recommend one with built-in Ethernet. It's going to work better. The driver is going to expect it. It's going to handle the network better. But I can't believe that it's going to cost. I mean, look, if you're buying a $75 box, surely it's not going to be $75 more to get a printer with Ethernet on it. I think that's the better way to go. I think in the long run, that's the more robust way to go, rather than adding the feature to a USB printer. In other words, don't be penny wise and pound foolish. I spent a lot of money on a network laser, color laser, but it was mostly because it was a color laser and all in one and so forth. But it's great. Every computer sees it. It shares wonderfully. Highly recommend that. 1247 now, Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
Try to have an open mind. Present.
Open mind. What did you say?
DSL Extreme here.
This is for the listeners.
Did you say try to have an open mind?
I'm not talking to you.
John and Ken, afternoons, tomorrow, 3 to 7.
I've given up on you.
I'm speaking on behalf of the listeners.
John and Ken, 3 to 7, on AM 640, online and on demand at KFIAM640.com.
Folks, DSL Extreme wants you to know you don't have to pay more to get the very best. Yes, you can get high-speed internet for a price much lower than cable, much lower than the phone companies in most cases. In fact, in some cases, lower than dial-up. You ready for the price? $12.95 a month. That's less than a car wash a month. And what do you get? You get great service from DSL Extreme. High-speed internet the way you want it, so you could participate in the YouTube revolution. You can watch video, listen to audio. You can listen to streaming radio. You can download podcasts. $12.95 a month. And you get free spam protection. The modem is free. You get 24-hour-a-day free local tech support. There are no setup fees. Just $12.95 a month for the first year for new customers. Some restrictions do apply. You should call 866-2-GET-NET to call DSL Extreme right now. 866-2-GET-NET. You can also visit them online at dslextreme.com. High-speed internet for the lowest price ever, just $12.95 a month from the best company ever, my internet service provider, DSL Extreme. Call 866-2-GET-NET to get DSL Extreme.
It's your weekend. We just make it more stimulating.
KFI AM 640.
KFI 1253 on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI is the phone number. And let's go back to the phones. And let's see. It looks like, who's next here? How about we take Mike in San Diego? Hey, Mike, welcome to KFI.
Yeah, Leo.
Hey.
I got a quick one for you, probably. I'm trying to take your advice after a couple years of listening, delete Norton antivirus.
Yep.
And I've deleted it out of removed it, but I still have a live tech. It says Live Reg. I'm sorry, Live Reg Semantic Corporation.
Yeah. And
on
the live update stays and a whole bunch of stuff stays.
Yeah.
It's a real pain. And there's a couple, kind of back them up, you don't want it to be too easy to uninstall antivirus software.
Yeah, I understand.
So this is so well known that, frankly, Symantec has finally offered a complete uninstaller. So you have to get it from the internet, from the website, from the Symantec website. And it does all of that extra stuff that the uninstaller should have done in the first place.
Okay.
Frankly. Now, if that doesn't work, I'm going to give you a link to that. But if that doesn't work, I'm also going to give you a link to a site that talks about all of the little bits and pieces that Norton puts in there and how to manually remove them. But I would start first with the Symantec uninstaller and use that first just to see if it does the job that you want it to do. You don't need to be too assiduous. You know, it's okay to have a few registry entries in there. But you don't want to have programs. You know, that live update, that should have been uninstalled. Why do you want that for there? But the other reason they leave that there is you may have other Norton products. So they don't want to just blithely assume that you're...
I've got a Norton WMI update. Is that the...
I think that's probably the Norton update.
Okay. And when I try to do that one, it says, am I sure I want to remove it? And then it says there's another... Yeah. Something else is running, so it won't let me.
Yeah. You need the Norton removal tool.
Okay, what is the website?
Well, the easiest thing to do, it's a long URL. It's from Symantec.com. If you do if you Google Norton removal tool...
Okay.
That'll take you to the page, and you can download it.
All right.
And it'll walk you through the process.
Okay.
The Norton removal tool. Why do they need that? Well, again, in their defense, maybe it's because they don't want viruses to be able to uninstall them.
Now I'm running through a router, and I'm running the Windows XP, and I'm getting the updates from Microsoft.
Good.
Do I need any? Anything else,
well,
or should that do it?
Technically, it's probably a good idea to have an antivirus and anti-spyware. However, if you really know what you're doing, you can kind of do without. Okay, so, but each thing does something differently. Now, the router really acts as a very good firewall. That keeps worms off your system. Worms are bad because they install themselves automatically. So no change in your behavior is going to protect yourself against worms. So you do need a firewall for that. Good news, the router is more than adequate. That keeps things like Sasser and MS Blast off your system.
Uh-huh.
Running updates is very important, and I recommend you install all critical updates immediately. And the reason is because they patch, again, holes in the system that allow bad guys to get in without you doing anything. So you're doing those two things. You're kind of preventing the unintentional infection. Now you also have to change your behavior, which is preventing the intentional infection, the infection that's you caused by doing something wrong, like, and the obvious one is opening attachments.
Stupid.
Yeah, something stupid,
yeah.
Like opening attachments, because that's how most viruses come in. They come in with a seemingly, either innocuous or even compelling message. Hey, here are those great Anna Kournikova pictures you've been looking for. Or,
right.
So you learn, and they may come from a friend. In fact, they often do come from a friend. So you learn not to open attachments in email. That's really important. Don't download files from music sharing sites. You know, if you're engaged in active piracy, you have to be extra careful.
No.
Because a lot of that stuff is actually not the movie you thought it was or the song you thought it was, but a virus. You also should be careful when you use chat rooms or instant messaging systems that you don't accept files from them. You know, it's pretty obvious. I mean, the real rule is don't run executables. And those can come in a variety of ways, and you have to be smart enough to know what's an executable and what's not. But if you do all those three things, you're probably not going to get viruses and spyware. Spyware is a little tricky. I would say don't use Internet Explorer, or at least use IE7, not IE6. Firefox might even be better, because that makes it harder for spyware to get in through the browser.
Yeah, I just downloaded IE7, I think.
Yeah, 7's much better. I would turn off... I use what I do, and I think this is a very good idea for safety, is I... use Firefox, and I use the No Scripts extension, which turns off scripting except on sites you explicitly allow it. Turns out scripting, even JavaScripting, is dangerous. However, even if you do all that, it's probably good to have Windows Defender. It's free from Microsoft.com/spyware. And a good antivirus, and scan periodically to make sure you haven't caught an infection. I think those things are prudent to do. You do all that, you're going to be safe. Absolutely. Absolutely. Leo Laporte, and of course we love Nod32 because it's lightweight and very fast and a sponsor. They support the show. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 12:59. Courtney Kramer's in the KFI News Center.
Sunday, January 14th.
KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks at 106. I'm Courtney Kramer, KFI News.
Thank you, Courtney. KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI. That's my phone number, 1-800-520-1534. We talk high tech every Saturday and Sunday from 11 to 2. And high tech doesn't just mean computers and the internet. We can talk about any kind of digital device, whether it's a cell phone, home theater, camcorder, digital camera, MP3 player, PDA, all of that. It's all food for thought, grist for the mill, meat for the table. Pat in Monrovia, welcome to KFI. You're an IT guy? Hello, Pat? I hear you, Pat.
Sorry about that. I was having a little wrestling with the cell phone.
I know how that is. Well, I did keep you on hold for quite a while. I thank you for your patience.
Yeah, I've been all around and through it. I've been in K-12 a lot. I was an independent company for a while, and I've done some training, too.
So do you want to defend IT guys?
You know, I don't think it's any from anything else in the retail world. Your experience is going to vary a lot depending on who you work with.
Right.
I've been through my nerd period, and that's over. And oddly enough, most of the people I work with are non-nerds. They're just regular working guys trying to keep things going.
Yeah. I think it's customer service, and some people are better at dealing with the public than others. But I kind of agree with this article. This is how this all started a couple of hours ago at the beginning of the show. I was reading from a blog posting. And the guy said, you know, as IT professionals, we've really got to consider this. And maybe do our best to improve the image of IT departments, because everybody who's ever dealt with an IT department has a story to tell about, you know, being scorned or mocked or laughed at or called names, whether it's in front of your face or behind your back.
Well, I've had a couple of funny stories. One of the schools back in the 90s, you remember those?
Oh, yes.
We just got Microsoft Works in there, and one of the secretaries lost a file, so... This was back in the gold. People are not going to believe this when I say this, but you used to be able to call Microsoft, and they'd answer right away. They wouldn't charge you or anything. And I talked to the tech there. I said, well, she lost her file. It froze while she was saving it. And I said, well, can you get in the machine and try it again? I said, well, no, it's frozen. And there was a little pause, and the guy said, oh, no. And it was gone. It was a bug.
He had a sense of humor anyway.
I think he was scared.
Oh, no, we lost one. Yeah, that was when they actually cared. As with many things at Microsoft, their success has become a problem. They, you know, there are hundreds of millions of Windows users now. Hard to support 100 million or 200 million people.
It is. And I worked at a call center for a couple of months, too, for Earthlink. And it was in Pasadena. It was a big place, and we were really busy.
Yeah.
If I were going to give anybody advice, I'd say, you know, when you buy a computer, if in any doubt, pay the extra money and get, like, Dell Gold Service is great.
Yeah, you know, I think that that's true, and I really don't emphasize that enough. If you're an expert, if you don't need help, if you can go on the internet and search, and frankly, you can get as good or better tech support just by searching the internet, but if you're, you know, you don't need to pay for this stuff. But if you are a regular everyday user and you think you're going to want some help, by all means, subscribe to these higher levels of support. So you have experience with Dell Gold and it's good?
Yeah, at the school district, we're like 50-50 with Dell, Apple, and I've been very happy with Gold.
You know,
and Apple's been very generous, too.
I often say don't buy these extended warranties, but this is a little different. This is extended support service.
They pick up right away, Leo.
Yeah, it makes a big difference. Same thing with AppleCare. You know, in theory, in the first year of a new Apple, you're covered by a warranty. But I'm told time and time again that you will get much more responsive tech support if you have that AppleCare number than
you
if
will.
You don't. Yeah.
I think you'd do okay if you're pretty good at computers if you don't buy the extended warranty. The nice thing with the Dell is a lot of them will even cover damage. So if you got a notebook and you wreck the screen, they'll replace it.
Yeah, I think that that's where the industry is going. The industry realizes people want better service. They understand that this is a problem. If people, and this, again, we have to blame ourselves. We wanted cheap hardware. But if people don't pay for the hardware, you know, they buy cheap hardware and they don't pay for the support, you're not going to get decent support. Nobody can afford to give it to you. And that's
would
just,
you like another,
yes,
would you like
absolutely.
Another enjoyable story?
Yes.
When I've been using computers for a long time. I never bought a Windows machine, but I did have a couple of Amigas. And this was in the days when the memory was in something called a zip chip, super fast chip that was really hard to install. So I put one of these in. I bent the pins inside my machine.
Oh,
I had to take it to a tech. And this guy was like an ultra nerd. He was very dismissive of me. And I mentioned to him I was sitting here in the shop. Right. I'm an Apple technician. I'm an authorized Apple technician. So Mac technicians, they just swap parts. They don't really fix anything. Since he had my computer there, I didn't say anything.
Yeah, you just agree. Yes, sir. Right, right.
Yep, we're kind of dumb.
Yeah, we're dumb. And whatever you can do to help us, little old me, I sure appreciate that.
I remember thinking to myself, oh, this guy can't be married. Because he said, shortly after I had that thought, he said, well, I'm going to go home and I'm going to probably play games for a few hours.
That's the prototypical nerdy IT guy. And those are the guys who have no social relationships. And so they don't know how to deal with people. Yeah.
Perhaps those people are more often found in programming. I don't know.
Well, they certainly are. Although I have to say, it's interesting to be a good programmer. You often have to be a broader person. And many of the really good programmers I know, the high-end guys, are actually musicians, or they have other interests. They're cool people often. So maybe it's not the programmer exactly. I think it's more the guy who isn't quite the programmer, but he knows a lot about computers and he spends a lot of time by himself in his room. Pat, I thank you for sharing your stories. I'm glad you're the good kind of IT guy. I'm sure the schools.
Can you help me out with a quick thing?
Sure.
I think you may have advice for me in this. How do I get my wonderful music podcast to rise from the bottom when I put in a search engine or whatever?
That is a tricky thing to do. Tell me about it. First of all, what kind of music? See, there's the musician again. What kind of music?
Well, I don't do the music, but I got together with my old friends. We used to be on a college radio station. It was down here in Long Beach, KSUL, Cal State Long Beach Station. So we revived the whole enterprise as this podcast.
Perfect.
And it's done with Roxio's Jam, so we can do the nice segues. We got some old routines and sketches from the old days that I still have in my archive. We use concert stuff that hopefully nobody will catch us using.
you don't want to rise too high on the rankings.
Really.
You don't want to catch attention.
I got Gary Owens doing funny stuff 25 years ago.
This is why one of the reasons I love podcasting as a radio professional is it's the reason we all got into radio in the first place is our love for this medium. And the most creative stuff is happening in college radio because there's no fetters. There's nobody telling you, oh, you can't do that, or that sounds unprofessional or whatever. And it's neat because podcasting allows people like you to get back to their roots, to start doing that stuff again without any program director saying you can't do that. And I think that's the best part. And by the way, some of the most interesting radio being done today is being done in podcasts for that very reason. Also, some of the worst radio done today is being done in podcasts.
Yes, there's a guy in his bedroom with a microphone
a lot
talking
of that.
About rock nerd.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. So if you have a podcast, the first thing to do is to get on a radio show like this one and promote it. So tell me the website.
Well, it's probably easiest to find it just by Google searching on KSUL.
All right.
The program is usually, we call it the Electrical Radio Program.
I'm going
to
listen.
So one of those things should bring it up for anybody who just wants a quick way of finding it.
All
I can tell you the actual site.
And you're in a number of podcast directories, which is how you used to do it. Unfortunately, nowadays, iTunes is really so dominant that
iTunes is a bear.
Yeah, I mean, that's really, if you're not on iTunes, you don't exist. And unfortunately, with 20,000 podcasts in their directory, it's highly unlikely that they'll find you and they'll highlight you. And it's really up to Apple to do so. I've been very fortunate. If you go to the tech section of iTunes, I'm all over it. In fact, I even have 3 podcasts in the top 25 right now. But that's just chance. That's just luck. And
you're working backwards. You're already known from TV and radio.
I'm working backwards, exactly, which makes it much easier for me. Because I can promote myself. So it's very difficult, I think, if you're a new podcaster. I think you have to treat it as you would a website, a blog, or any online entity. You've got to go to other similar sites, places where people, for instance, might listen to freeform radio and promote it there. Guerrilla marketing is really the rule. You can't wait for Apple to discover you. It's highly unlikely, frankly. What is it digitalpodcast? Where is it? It's I'm looking on Google here. What is the URL for the website?
The full URL is kind of long because it's on .mac. It's homepage.mac.com.
Okay.
and then /Foxtrot 32.
I like
to take
it.
You there.
Yeah, all right. Well, I'm going to put that in our show notes, and that way at least some people will find you. And that's kind of the other thing is it kind of has to get a life of its own. It has to start, word of mouth is everything. Oh, I love this page. This reminds me of my days in the early days of radio. That could be me.
Foxtrot 32 for you Genesis fans is a combination of the album Foxtrot and the Chamber of 32 Doors.
Wow. Talk about
progressive rock nerd.
There's some substance abuse going on there somewhere. KSUL, it's the virtual KUSUL, and I love the idea, and that's exactly what podcasting is all about. I think it's great that you're doing that, Pat. And we'll give you a plug. We'll put it on the webpage, and then just find other people who are, you know, going to do that kind of thing. There must be other college radio stations. There must be places where freeform radio fans gather. You got to find those places and get to them. You were doing this a couple of years after me. I was in college radio in the 76, 77 era. You're a little bit after me, but it looks very, very familiar. It's kind of a fond memory. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Those were the good old days. On KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 117.
News without the snooze. Bill Handel, tomorrow morning, 5 to 9.
KFI, AM 640.
Just a few minutes left on KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI is that phone number. Joe and Pomona, welcome
Hello. To
KFI. Hey, Joe!
Yes, I have Windows 2000.
Okay.
I was noticing a slow download, so I tried to do a defrag, nothing happened, analyze, nothing happened. And then I noticed it wasn't receiving email from Outlook.
Okay.
And then I noticed the printer wasn't there, and I couldn't reestablish the printer.
Oh, dear.
And also, what else?
Sounds like it's falling apart there.
When I try to bring up a Windows document, it tells me that I can't have any links between documents.
Okay.
What do you think?
Sounds pretty badly damaged.
And as in hardware?
No. I mean, normally that would just be a software issue. It just happened all at once, huh?
Yeah, like a couple of days it started happening. I tried to do a check disk at a local computer club, but it did that a couple of times. It seemed like it went worse after I tried to do a check disk.
Ah, that's interesting. It could be that the hard drive is starting to go bad, and these are symptoms of failing, programs that aren't working properly because the hard drive itself is damaged. And a check disk could exacerbate that by finding bad sectors and mapping them out, breaking more programs.
I see.
So this would be a case for something like SpinRite. Now, that's $80. I'm not sure you want to spend that much money. In fact, a new hard drive isn't much more than that. A check disk is very limited in the kind of checking it can do of a hard drive. If you had data on there or something you really needed to recover and you couldn't get to it, SpinRite would be a good program to run against that hard drive. It basically reformats it without losing the data, underneath the data. And it can move data that's on a bad sector. If it can read it even once in 1,000 times, it'll move it, map that sector out, and it can actually recover a hard drive that's starting to fail. But it sounds like it hasn't gotten too bad yet. My strong suggestion, is copy your data off of that drive just so that you have a copy of it, whether it's to a CD or an external hard drive, but get that data off that drive.
I have an F drive. I can copy it.
Yeah, copy it now. And, you know, it wouldn't be a bad idea. You probably haven't reinstalled Windows in several years. 2000 is fantastic in terms of robustness and reliability, but this might be a good chance to copy your data, make a good backup of all your stuff, assemble your various application disks and so forth, and then format the drive and reinstall. And don't do a quick format. Do a full format. That'll map out any sectors that can't be read, and it might fix the problem entirely.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, 2000 was, I think, the best version of Windows. But it's, you know, eventually Microsoft's going to phase it out as they have phased out Windows 95, 98, and ME. They will phase out 2000 next, then XP in a few years. They want you to upgrade. They want you to move on. And frankly, I resist moving from 2000. That was the best version of Windows ever. Peter and Van Nuys, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Peter.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm great. Welcome.
Good, thank you. I've got an issue that's prevailing on my system that's driving me crazy.
Okay.
When I boot up the computer, I see the sharing on the drives on my system on the network. And about a minute to 2 minutes after it seems to stop loading, the screen flashes, and then the handshakes go away. And also notice now I'm losing my sound device at the same time.
Oh,
so
boy.
Something is stepping on it.
Yeah, I could see, you know, sometimes the network dies. I have a Windows machine that the network just dies when there's a lot of activity. I think it's overheating. I think the little chip on the network card is overheating and dying. But this sounds a little more serious. I would bet that on that system it is motherboard-based network and sound. You don't have a separate sound card, or do you?
It's a separate sound card. It's okay. A creative. And a separate video card.
And a separate network interface card.
No, the network is on the motherboard.
That is on the motherboard.
Right.
Yeah, it could be an interrupt conflict. What version of Windows? Is it XP?
XP Service Pack 2.
Yeah, it could be an interrupt conflict. All of those use interrupts.
Uh-huh.
The sound card dying is kind of, to me, that's a telling symptom, but I'm not sure exactly what it means. I guess what I would try doing is seeing if you can get updated drivers for the sound card.
And
that might help, that if there is a conflict, an interrupt conflict there, it might help. In fact, look for updated motherboard drivers, too. The network interface card has, even though it's on the motherboard has drivers, and the interface card will have drivers, too. Look
right
to the manufacturer of the computer or the motherboard for those.
Right. Okay.
You know, that's the first thing you always do when you have something like this. Update those drivers.
Okay.
See if that helps. And if it doesn't, it could be there is more of a hardware problem. Could be something else, but usually, I mean, a situation like that, one hardware device can't really impact another hardware device except in software, either through a conflict or conflicting drivers. So updating drivers should help. If that doesn't, then you might want to look at the interrupts it's using and make sure they're not the same. Odd are the same. So 1, 3, and 5, that's the same interrupt. Those can conflict with each other, same as 2, 4, and 6. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio, 129. Courtney Kramer's in the KFI News Center.
Fiercely family friendly, Dr. Laura, tomorrow, noon to 3.
KFI AM 640.
137 on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Dr. Dean Edel coming up in just a little bit. About 2 o'clock, but I'll be back Saturday and Sunday of next week, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. to take your calls and talk about high tech, my favorite subject. Chaz is in San Diego. Hey, Chaz, welcome to KFI.
Hey, Leo. Before my question, really quick, a few minutes ago you said how a lot of the best IT guys and developers are not from that formal background. And
yes.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention, excuse me, one of my best friends works in New York City as a developer for a website, and his background is in classical music.
It's not at all uncommon.
Yeah.
There's something about music, particularly, I think because it's mathematical, it's left-brained, or maybe it's, I can never remember left-right brain, but it's that same side of the brain that the computers live on. And so there's a lot of cross-pollinization. I don't know if that's going to change, if it'll become more professional. Certainly in the early days of computers, no one had any professional training. I mean, we were all, you know, untrained. People often say, well, how could you talk about computers? You never went to school. When I was in school, if you studied computers, it wasn't personal computing. It was mainframe computing. It was Fortran. Yeah. It was punch cards. It wouldn't have been any help anyway.
I took a punch card class in high school.
Yeah, a lot of good that did you.
For that. Oh, yeah, right. Okay, well, here's my question. I'm totally geeking out today, actually this whole weekend. I'm building a server. I'm hoping to run Geeksbox on it, if you're familiar with that. It's an open source Linux media server.
Great idea. I'd really like to know how that works out for you.
Yeah, I hope it does. But my problem right now is kind of mundane, but something I don't have a lot of knowledge in. So I have a nice and expensive ATX motherboard with an Athlon chip on it. And I have a nice new but reasonably priced power supply. And the power supply has a, as far as the motherboard power goes, it has the 20-pin connector.
Okay.
And there's a 20-pin connector on the motherboard. It's not the 24 pins all in a row.
Okay.
And then somewhere else, like way across the, you know, motherboard is a 2x2 pin connector, which is for the auxiliary power.
Right.
So, and there's a there's a thing that looks like it goes in there,
right.
And in the manual it says it does.
Right. The new ATX cases have these weird power supplies, and the motherboards are set up for that.
Yeah, and I guess it's to give it extra power, which I may want, because I may want to be putting a lot of hard drives on there. I don't know. But the problem is, when I connect it, there seems to be two possible ways I can connect it, like it'll fit.
Really?
And,
that's not good.
I know, and I hope I didn't break something. But when I put it in, either nothing powers up at all, or if I put it in the opposite way, the fans kind of turn backwards for a split second, and then nothing happens.
That would sound like the wrong way.
Yeah, so the only way that anything works, like the fans go on, is if I just leave that unplugged.
Okay.
And I'm wondering, what the heck?
What the heck is right? I'm not sure. Tell me again the make of the motherboard.
The motherboard is an ECS.
Okay. I would look in the manual that came with the motherboard.
Yeah, it just has a diagram, and I have both manuals. They both have pretty nice manuals, I guess, but they don't really... they say what the voltages should be, but the little diagrams of the connectors don't look the same. Like if on these diagrams, the connectors are either squares or like squares with beveled corners. And
yes, that's normally how they are, so that you can't accidentally connect them wrong. That's
right.
Why I'm puzzled. I'm trying to think of what this power connector is. This extra.
It's supposed to be exactly for what both descriptions in the manuals agree, except the diagrams are a little different, and one of them is a little vague about it. Just says pin 1, 2, 3, and 4, but doesn't show you on the picture which ones they're talking about.
There is an optional connector, and I think that that's probably what that is. It's
okay.
Probably a WTX. Is it a WTX form factor? Do you know what? You need to know
ATX.
It's ATX.
It's an ATX board.
Okay. Because there are oddball boards that have additional optional connectors.
Okay.
But if it's an ATX board,
it should be normal, right?
It should be very normal. I think that there are auxiliary connectors. Is it a six with the extra? So there's one that's big that has 20 pins.
That one's fine.
And that's the main power connector.
Right.
Is the other one
okay.
six? Is it a 6-pin connector?
No, it's 4.
It's a 4-pin.
And it's
connector.
Coming out of the same like tentacle as the 20-pin is coming out of.
So some ATX motherboards have this extra auxiliary 6-pin connector. Those are designed exactly as you thought to give it extra power if they think it's going to need more than 250 watts to run the power. So you're saying you have a 4-pin connector.
Yeah, and my motherboard only has this 4. It has this 4. It's
I would ignore
two
it.
Thing.
I don't know what
you
it
would
is.
Just ignore it? Okay.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. It should be documented in the motherboard manual. The fact that it's not.
It's weekly documented.
Yeah. Does it say, is there a name silk screened on the motherboard or anything for this? It's not part of the ATX spec. There is no 4-pin connector.
Okay.
There's a 6-pin auxiliary connector. It sounds like you don't have that.
Right.
I don't know what this 4-pin connector is.
Okay. All right. What do you think the chances are that I really damage something
Nothing.
By plugging?
Nothing.
Okay.
It's probably... So it doesn't have a name silkscreened or in the manual? Does it... Any information?
Yeah, in the manual, it's called ATX 12-volt power connector, which is really helpful.
Yeah.
As opposed to ATX 20-pin power connector. And the voltages are the same. I mean, there's two grounds and two positive 12 volts, and both manuals show that. But they show the little beveled things differently, and I tried it. Actually,
I am baffled, to be honest. Yeah, you could have fried something. It depends what that's hooked up to. That's the problem. I don't get. I'm not sure what it is. I would leave it unconnected and see if things work okay. Oh, you know what it might be? Somebody's saying this in the chat room, and this might actually be what it is. It might be for, is it right next to the PCI? Do you have a PCI Express slot on that? And is it right next to the PCI Express? That's what it is. It's the power supply for a PCI Express card.
Okay.
And if you don't have a PCI Express video card, don't worry about it.
Okay.
If you do, you may have fried it.
No, I don't.
Okay.
So
don't worry about it.
I'll keep my fingers crossed.
And just hope that everything works.
All right. Thanks a lot, Lee.
Yeah, that's bizarre. But now I do remember those extra little power connectors right next to the PCI Express slot. And that's what that is. That's to power these heavy-duty video cards now. That they're not satisfied with motherboard power. Sorry for the geeky call, guys. Dave from Van Nuys, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Dave. Welcome. Did I put you to sleep?
Yes. Hi, Leo.
Hey, David.
Dave
welcome.
Van Nuys.
All right. How are you?
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
I've got a problem on this PCI Express motherboard from Intel.
So we got the same question again. All right. Go ahead.
No.
Okay.
The question is, my WMV video cards, video incoming files to display, comes in little bursts, and
uh-oh,
it may burst for 5 seconds,
right,
giving a little bit of audio, a tiny bit,
right,
of video action, and it proceeds to do this all the way through.
Now, there's two questions for you.
Sure.
First of all, is this stuff off the internet or is this stuff off the hard drive?
This is coming in off the internet.
Oh, okay. If it's the hard drive, then that would mean you're not getting enough bandwidth off your hard drive, and that's kind of a hard one to fix. This is because the internet is not keeping up with the video.
Yeah, well, what happens is if I suffer through this whole process at the end and then replay it, because it's now in RAM.
It's downloaded, yeah.
It plays fine.
Yeah, this happens to everyone, including me. It's normal. It's because the download from the site that's offering you this video is not sufficiently fast for you to watch it in real time. So this started happening when these media players allowed you to stream files as they were downloading. In the old days, there were two kinds of video or even audio files, streaming audio and downloadable audio. But as the internet got faster, people realized, you could be downloading an MP3 and you can actually probably play it as you're downloading it. So so many Windows media players and QuickTime started playing these things back as they were downloading. That's what's happening. If you go to YouTube, the same thing happens. You go to YouTube, it'll play for a little bit and then it'll pause. It's just because the download isn't happening fast enough to continue to play. But once you've downloaded it, it plays fine, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Once it's downloaded, I can save it to disk and it plays right on through.
Yeah, it's exactly what happens to everybody. It's completely normal. You're probably watching it. Flash does this too, and it's just because it's trying to play it as it's downloading and just not getting enough.
Okay.
It's being strangled.
I'm going to phone back in with another question if there's enough time.
We're running out of time on the show, so you might have to be next Saturday. Go ahead, ask it quickly.
Okay. Firefox has suddenly decided to not be able to find the server almost every single time.
Bad Firefox. But Explorer works fine.
Explorer is also doing a little bit, but mostly for Firefox is just...
Well, if Explorer is doing it too, there's nothing wrong with Firefox. It's something wrong with your DNS or your internet connection. I would check with your ISP. You can get alternate DNS servers. In fact, Mike B. in our chat room suggests using Verizon's DNS. This is one way to see if it's a DNS issue. Try where the settings for DNS are. You'll probably have it blank or have put in numbers that are provided by your internet service provider. But if they're not coming up fast enough or sometimes they're not working fully, you could try other companies. There's one from OpenDNS. I frankly have found that OpenDNS is a little slow. I was using it for a while. It's basically a service provided to people whose DNS servers, these are the kind of the internet phone book that when you enter in a name like youtube.com, turns it into the numbers that the browser actually needs. If that's not working or it's slow, the browser will say, I can't find it because the DNS has failed. OpenDNS.com is one to try, not my favorite. Mike says, use Verizon's, and I don't know how Verizon feels about that, but that's 4.4.4.2 and 4.4.4.1. Just to see if it's working, try opendns.com and see if that fixes or improves the reliability. If it does, then the problem is your internet service provider's DNS servers are not very good. You might also check with the ISP and make sure you're using the proper DNS servers. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 150.
John, Ken, and the Bullhorn of Truth. John and Ken, tomorrow, 3 to 7.
KFI AM 640.
156, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let me clarify this DNS thing because I'm going to rush through that. But it's kind of a useful thing to know. So in order for you, for the internet to work on your system, here's what happens. You enter an address like KFIAM640.com into your browser. The browser checks with the computer and says, do you know where that is? The computer may have that in its cache. It kind of keeps track of recently visited pages. It may have it in a file called hosts. But if it doesn't have it in either of those, it says, no, I have no idea. Why don't we check with the internet service provider? And then it goes to what are called the DNS servers. You have them in your setup often, although if they're blank, the normal configuration routine will set them up for you automatically, and it'll check with your internet service provider's DNS servers for that address. Well, you don't have to use your internet service provider's DNS servers. You can use anybody's, pretty much. That's the nature of the system. So Mike B. has frequently told me he's very happy with Verizon's, which are I gave the numbers out wrong. It's 4.2.2.2 and 4.2.2.3. But we're going to put a link, a long link, of other DNS servers that you can try in the show notes. It's from DSL Reports. And then there's also opendns.com. Their idea is to provide a kind of free and open DNS server, but I found them to be kind of slow. Problem with free is they don't have the resources to throw behind it, as a big company like Verizon might. Use your internet service provider's servers if you can, if they're working for you. But if you have trouble, it's a good diagnostic to try somebody else's. That may, in fact, improve things for you. Let's say, I don't have enough time to take another call, but we will adjourn today and reconvene next Saturday and Sunday, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Of course, you can catch lots of tech information on all different areas of technology on my website, twit.tv, TWIT.tv. Show notes for this show are at leo.am. Shuby's done a good job of getting all those links in there, including the one I just mentioned. So if you were listening and you couldn't follow what was going on, it'll all be right there. All right. Twit.tv. That's all you have to remember in the world. TWIT, which stands for This Week in Tech, .tv. And Leo, which stands for me, .am. And we'll put the show up so you can listen to it online as a podcast. You can find that at KFIAM640.com. Use the keyword podcasts or on my sites. That's kind of a neat way to listen to the show if you miss it, but we do like it if you listen live and call in. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Dr. Dean Adell is coming up next, but first on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 159. Let's head to Courtney Kramer in the KFI News Center. Have a great day. Well, that's it for this edition of The Tech Guy on KFI. Thanks so much for listening. If you're ever in the Southern California area, I hope you'll listen live on the radio every Saturday and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on KFI AM 640. You can also listen on the internet anytime at KFIAM640.com. Archives of older shows are available online on my website. That's leo.am. Click the audio archives button. And of course, you can subscribe to the podcast, which is leo.am/podcasts/KFI. My thanks to Howard Bailey for providing the theme music for this show. You can listen to Howard's music at soundclick.com. Thanks to DSL Extreme for providing the bandwidth. Of course, first of all, thanks to you for listening. I'll see you next time on KFI.